In fact, a good way to think of how effective, how active you could be as a defender with a smoothbore musket, active in pushing back an attack, that is, think about one person at one goal line of a football field and another person at the other goal line of a football field, armed with a smoothbore musket. Chances are that one person 100 yards away from another one only had about an even chance of hitting the person at the other end of the football field. That's not a very long range, and it gives attackers very wide latitude. Rifle muskets, which came into general use in the mid-1850s and which became the most dominant shoulder weapon, certainly by the midpoint of the Civil War, had a much longer range. They had an extreme range of upwards of 1,000 yards, but an effective range of at least 300 yards, which means that the amount of ground that an attacker would have to cover under fire, under effective fire from defenders, was three times as far as it had been in the days of smoothbores. That meant that attacking formations could be broken up much more effectively. It meant that cavalry was useless as an attacking arm against infantry during the Civil War, because veteran infantry armed with rifle muskets could render any cavalry formation completely chaotic long before it reached the defending position, because they could shoot down so many horses. It also meant that artillery could no longer be run up close to defending infantry, because again, the rifle muskets allowed the infantrymen to shoot down artillery horses and pick off gunners who came too close to the defensive positions. So the rifle musket made an enormous difference in that regard. This change was made possible by the advent of what we now call the mini-ball, and it worked very simply. There had been rifles for many, many years before the Civil War. You've heard of Pennsylvania rifles and other rifles used in the 18th century and early 19th century. The problem with them was that you had a ball that was very closely fitted and very difficult to get down the barrel of one of the early rifles. The black powder was a very dirty propellant, so it fouled the rifling in the barrel quickly, and you could not fire these early rifles rapidly, and you also had to clean them quite frequently. The development of the mini ball solved this. The mini ball was slightly smaller than the caliber of the weapon. It had a hollow base. It's a lead projectile with a hollow base. When you fired it, the base expanded. It engaged the grooves in the rifling and gave you all that extra distance from your shoulder weapon. It was a major step forward. Although the rifle muskets, to our eyes, outwardly look no more modern than a smoothbore musket, in fact, they brought great changes to Civil War battlefields. And at the same time, you had a change in artillery weapons as well, with the advent of rifled tubes in cannons at the same time that you're getting rifling in the shoulder weapons. One other factor also increased the power of the defenders on Civil War battlefields, and that was the advent of field fortifications. If you put a soldier armed with a rifled weapon behind field works, it made him that much stronger. As the attackers came toward him, he not only had all the range that the rifle musket gave him, he also had protection of the field fortifications. It was a good rule of thumb, recognized by soldiers on both sides in the war, that a defender armed with a rifle musket behind field works was worth at least three attackers in terms of power and effectiveness on the battlefield. Officers on both sides were aware of this, and one of the key pieces of tactical doctrine that they shared was that it was very difficult to come to grips in an advantageous situation with defenders armed with these rifle muskets. The defense had the advantage over the offense. The next thing they shared flowed naturally from this, and that was you should avoid frontal assaults if at all possible. If defenders are so much stronger, and especially defenders behind field fortifications are so much stronger, then you shouldn't try to attack them head on. It's better to try to get at them some other way. Now, they had seen in Mexico many of these soldiers under Winfield Scott's leadership how effective turning movements could be. That is, instead of attacking directly your opponent, try to get around either the right or left flank of your opponent. Bring the mass of your troops to bear on the weak end points of the enemy's line. Flank the enemy, don't attack him head on. Soldiers on both sides agreed that that would be a better way to try to achieve tactical success on a battlefield.